Okay, let me just make sure we are in the Glasgow Girls Club. We are. It looks like we're in the right group and we're ready to go. So, hello everybody. My name is Laura McGuinness. I'm the founder of the Glasgow Girls Club Facebook group and membership. And I'm delighted to be joined tonight by an array of GGC business members and women who are experts in each of their fields. And we're going to be chatting more about each of their fields shortly. So, this month, if you didn't potentially already know, is Menopause Awareness Month. So I wanted to pull together a panel of experts to chat about different areas of a woman's life in relation to menopause. Now, you will all potentially already know as well that I and my other admin team, we look out for key themes, which are always coming up in the group, and we look to create some valuable content in response to it. And menopause and perimenopause actually are something that a community of 40,000 women are absolutely looking to chat about. So tonight I've been joined by some real powerhouse players in the menopause space. I'm going to be introducing you to each of them. We've got a brilliant running order, and each of the ladies on this call is going to be chatting about menopause in relation to their area of expertise and what they each do. There will hopefully be chat opportunity at the end of the live to cover off some questions. So if you have some questions whilst you're watching this, please do pop them in the chat box below and we will try our very best to come around the questions. If not, it might be that the questions get answered thereafter. Okay, so I am going to just go for it and introduce our first speaker, who is Pauline Nicol. So I'm just going to read a wee bit of a bio for Pauline and then I'm going to let her take over. So Pauline is a founder of the Saoirse Menopause Consultancy along with Mo Caldwell. The Saoirse Menopause Consultancy is a social enterprise company aiming to educate, inform, and empower people and businesses about menopause. Saoirse is Gaelic for freedom, and this is the ethos behind their company. Partnering with Menopause Experts Group, Saoirse Menopause Consultancy offers a wide range of menopause training and education workshops. They bring to life the impacts that menopause symptoms can have by sharing their lived experience and extensive knowledge. They break down the barriers of this taboo subject, delivering training and support in a light-hearted and impactful way. Tonight, Pauline has joined us, and her focus will be on the stages of menopause, what causes the symptoms, and recognizing these. So, without further ado, welcome Pauline.
Thank you, Laura. So the first thing to say, I guess, about menopause is that it is a natural transition, and every person born with a womb will go through this. They may experience it differently, but everyone will go through it. And I guess before we even get to that, it's probably useful to say that when we're born, we are born with all the eggs in our body that we will ever have, and those eggs are released regularly once you get to puberty, which on average these days is about 10. And that's the point where your brain kind of kicks in thinking body's optimal now for producing a baby, and then the fertilization hormones start to be released, and those are estrogen, progesterone, and a little testosterone. Those hormones kind of kickstart your fertile years, which is and are integral to being able to become pregnant and maintain a healthy pregnancy to birth. Those fertile years run from about 10 to 40 on average. And by the age of 40, your eggs are starting to decrease, and therefore those hormones that we talked about, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone, start to fluctuate. That stage is called perimenopause. And you're usually still menstruating at that stage, but that's when you will start to notice some symptoms kicking in, triggered by the reduction in hormones. The next stage is menopause, and that's defined as a year since your last period. So you're actually only menopausal for one day. The stage following that would be postmenopausal, which is defined as 1 year and 1 day since your last period. And again, just to say that every woman will go through it. Now, there are variations on this, one of them being early menopause, and there are a number of reasons that you can become menopausal early. One being primary ovarian insufficiency. And that's typically if a woman is under 40 years of age. And statistics show that this can affect one in 100 women can be menopausal by the time they're 40, with the youngest in the UK being 15, which is really shocking. Another reason for early menopause could be surgical menopause, where a woman's had surgery for fibroids or perhaps cancer, and that's when the womb and the ovaries are taken out. So your hormones decrease quite rapidly, actually, and you can suddenly be put into full-blown menopause. There's also another reason for this could be chemical menopause, where as a consequence of perhaps chemo or radiotherapy, you can become menopausal as well. One thing to note is once you are postmenopausal, you remain in that stage for the rest of your life. And 100 years ago, the average age of menopause was actually 57. And women then, the life expectancy was only about 59. Now, these days, the average age of menopause is 51, and the average life expectancy is 81. So that's practically a third of your life you can be, you are then postmenopausal with the different symptoms to manage as well. And 25% of women say that they don't have any severe symptoms of menopause, but 75% of women do say that they notice symptoms impacting their life and work state, their workplace as well. With 25% of those women saying it severely has impacted their lives. So some of the symptoms, we'll look at those and what causes the symptoms. We mentioned the three hormones that are required through our fertile years. One of those, estrogen, is the big one. And our bodies are, we've got hormone receptors in our bodies from the brain to the tip of our pinky toe. With the brain is the biggest area with receptors. The breasts, the gut, as well as the vulva, vagina and the womb are the next large area of receptors. If we think of estrogen as a really delicious, almost lubricating hormone, it keeps all areas of our body lubricated and nice, and so can be like your all areas, your gut, your brain, your joints, your endocrine system, you know, all of those areas require estrogen, with the biggest areas we said being the brain. Estrogen is needed to help inflammatory processes, and there are over 40 symptoms, recognised symptoms now. The early stages of perimenopause, typically women present with joint and ache pains or back pain or increased migraines or first noticing that they have migraines. And if we think that the brain, if we continue to think about the brain and that being the biggest receptor, another symptoms or the psychological symptoms can be the most debilitating. They definitely were for me. So that lack of concentration, the lack of focus, the anxiety, poor concentration as well, as well as the joint pains and aches. And they, when I think back, those were probably happening for me right about my early 40s. And then you've got the low mood, the trouble sleeping as well, has an impact on you also. Another one that's unusual that people talk about is burning mouth, like a sensation in their mouth that it's burning, or their skin feels that it's really, really itchy. There's like a crawling feeling as well. We all know about the hot flushes, because a lot of people typically think menopause is hot flushes and your period stopping. It is so much more than hot flushes and your period stopping. However, they are definitely part of it. They are it is actually that ultimately it is your period stopping that is you're then menopausal. But before you get there, those periods can be increasingly heavy, erratic. You can have very light ones, you know, a very light period for a couple of days, and then a full-blown period, a few, you know, less than your 20-day cycle later. Or you can go long periods of time, 6-7 weeks sometimes, and no period, and then you're back to like your seem to be your regular cycle. And again, those can be really hard to deal with. For me, again, if we bring in that lived experience, traveling to my job, I live in Cumbernauld, traveling to Edinburgh on public transport was absolutely impossible on some of the days of the periods. It was so bad. And in fact, I was actually hospitalised eventually for really heavy periods. And as well as the night sweats, I mean, women can feel like they are up 3-4 times a night, having to change beds, lying on towels, cool mats, everything, just like wake up swimming. And also the hot flashes during the day, or hot flushes as we call them here during the day, can be really debilitating and embarrassing for women. There are other areas lumped together called vaginal atrophy. And some of those conditions are like a dry vagina, dry vulva, itchiness, inflammation. This, again, all linked back to estrogen, that lubricating hormone that not only keeps your bones, muscles lubricated, but also your skin. And that area can become increasingly thin. The skin in those areas becomes increasingly thinner, shorter. You know, it can draw up, it can become so thin that it actually splits and causes problems, whether that's just weeing or, you know, as I said, the itchiness or painful sex. So the list is, you know, as I said, 40 plus symptoms. Now, menopause in women over 45 is determined, it's a diagnosis, a symptoms-led diagnosis over 45. So what there's no test, but doctors will rule out other conditions, perhaps, you know, trouble with thyroid anemia that may lead to some of these symptoms, can cut across a number of conditions. So whilst it's there's no test specifically for menopause in women over 45, they will perhaps do blood tests to rule out other conditions. In women under 45, a doctor may do a series of blood tests called testing for FSH hormones, follicle stimulating hormone blood tests may be done over a number of weeks to be able to help identify it in women under 45. But if you think that you may be perimenopausal, it is a great idea to keep a symptoms tracker. They're easily available online. There are apps you can download that will help you do this. Perhaps, and some of those apps will send you a reminder to log your symptoms that day. And if you then, you can quickly see if there's patterns there, you'll quickly see the list of symptoms, you're able to tick them off. And if and when you do need to go to the doctor, that can be imperative and help lead the diagnosis as well. So symptoms, extensive symptoms trackers will help you identify them and also help you see a pattern of those symptoms, and then it will be really useful if and when you decide to go to the GP. I think that will cover everything from me.
Thank you so much for that, Pauline. That was a brilliant overview of what perimenopause is, what menopause is, the abundance of symptoms that come with it as well, and some great advice on tracking symptoms as well. And what I'll do for any ladies watching, I'll ask the ladies on this Zoom to pop their contact details in the comments underneath it, so that if anybody's looking to connect with them directly, they can do so. Okay, so thank you so much, Pauline. We're now going to delve a wee bit into symptoms and some kind of tools and tactics that can be used to try and alleviate some of the hormonal fluctuations and things that happen in a woman's body during this stage of their life. So we will move on to our next expert, who is Emma McElhaney, founder of Team EMW, which is Eat, Move, Win. That's right, Emma, isn't it? Loving it. Okay, so a wee bit about Emma. Rebel queenager and fun lover, your fearless guide to smashing midlife mediocrity and tapping into your limitless potential. As a trailblazing perimenopausal and behaviour change expert, specialist, Emma's mission is to transform women who feel marooned in monotony into their audacious, dazzling, ultimate badass selves.
Yes. Well done.
Yes, that is quite the mouthful. Loving it. Emma's focus for the session tonight, ladies, is going to be nutrition and lifestyle fundamentals to fight the fatigue, beat the bloat, and moderate the moods that come with hormone fluctuations. So step forward, Emma.
Hi. Hi, everyone. So following on from what Pauline was talking about there and some of the key symptoms, I don't love calling them symptoms just purely because it's not really an illness, it's not a disease, it's more of the impacts that happen in a woman's life. So the key ones I see, like in my industry, I see a lot of people coming to me with body changes. I see a lot of people coming to me with fatigue, tiredness, not able to focus, some brain fog. And also this kind of feeling of meh, just kind of feeling stuck in a rut, because a whole lot of other things going on in their life, careers, relationships, and it's kind of less, where am I? What do I want to do? Who even am I? And when you don't recognize your body changing as well, it can be quite a challenging time. So one of the big things that I talk about is this is not a time for just, you know, giving up on yourself. This is a time, there's so much opportunity. And when we heard Pauline talk about how long of a woman's life can be with perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, it's so sad to see people just going, oh, well, there's no point really now. This is it. It's the beginning of the end. And maybe, yes, once upon a time it was, but absolutely no longer. So I like to talk about what we can control, because we've ultimately got control over everything that we do. And I'm going to tackle that from what we put in our body, how we move our body, and how we rest our body. And then I'm going to hand over to Isabel, and she's going to talk about a big part of it as well, which is around stress. So some key components to nutrition. Now, going back to the body composition changes, not everybody notices weight gain, but most people will notice the body changing. So due to the hormone changes, they might see like a more of a growing midsection, sometimes affectionately called the meno middle. And that can be quite a troublesome thing if you've used to going through your 30s all svelte, and then suddenly this appears, and that's because of the hormone changes. But also what happens from late 30s onwards is our metabolism slows down as well, and that slows down because our muscle mass starts to waste away, which doesn't sound particularly pleasant. So that means our metabolism slows down, which means it's easier for us to gain body fat and harder for us to lose it. So everything that I teach, I'm coming at from a health point of view and a hormone optimization point of view, but these tools can also be implemented for fat loss as well. So if anybody out there has got that as a goal, or you're looking to manage it, then these tips that I'm going to give you are suitable for that as well. The other thing I'm going to touch on is movement, and that's hugely important because as well as the muscle mass deteriorating, we also have our bone density deteriorating, which kind of makes you go, Mother Nature, you are a bit of a cow. You have done this on purpose. Not fair. So, nutrition key points. The first one is hydration. And every single person watching this is going to roll their eyes at me because they're like, oh, all these health pros always talk about water. But when I see that a lot of the biggest symptoms or impacts are like brain fog, fatigue, digestive issues, stress, lack of sleep, not able to focus, some of those can actually be due to dehydration, because your body just doesn't work as well. Our body likes balance, and one of the key components of balance is hydration. So making sure that we're getting enough water, and it sounds really simple, but if you're not drinking at like minimum 2 liters of water a day, there's a good chance that you might actually be dehydrated, and a lot of the brain fog and the bloating might actually go away once you get that sorted. So that's the key one. The next one, and this is a big one. We hear a lot about cutting out carbs, and we hear a lot about, you know, no carbs before marbs, but we want to look at it slightly differently. most women don't tend to eat enough protein in their diet. And protein is, it's called a macronutrient, which is basically big as a big nutrient. And most people will get their protein from lean animal protein, like chickens and pork and beef. You get it from eggs, you can get it from plant-based sources, but not in as high a quantity. But protein is, it contains all these building blocks that are going to help repair certain parts of us. So our muscle mass is deteriorating, combined with resistance training, which I'll talk about in a little minute. Protein is going to help grow and repair that muscle mass, and as it will for all other cells in the body. But one of the other things it's really valuable for is it helps us stay full for longer. It takes longer to digest than most other foods. So your body's still doing all this thing. It stops you grazing, stops you snacking on things that are going to maybe spike and crash your blood sugar. So it kind of helps keep that focus throughout the day. The next one we want to be looking at is fruit and veg. And it's it. We all know we should be eating 5 portions of fruit and veg. But when you actually look at what is a portion of fruit and veg, and anywhere between like 80 and 100 grams, most people don't. And it's when we want to think about optimized hormones and optimized health, we all want to think about things like gut health as well. And fruit and veg is one of the key components of that. So it's really going to help get the nutrients that you need, that's going to help you, you know, regulate a lot of the things that are going on. So really, really powerful when it comes to our nutrition. We all have control over it. And one of the big things, and I hate to talk about restriction and things that we shouldn't have because it's not really how I operate, but reducing the amount of alcohol is a big one. And I feel like such a hypocrite to say that, people, but alcohol is the curse of the perimenopause and menopause women. It impacts so much. And primarily, like when you consume alcohol, it's a toxin. So your body wants out your body quick as possible, but that means it's not going to function as well in all these other body functions that you've got, all this cell renewal that we're talking about, the metabolism we're talking about. It's just trying to get rid of the wine. So reduce the wine. It'll help so much in terms of your energy levels, your mood, your sleep, your stress levels, and even your fat loss as well. So it's a good thing to reduce. And also processed foods as well. And when, like, it's not about removing everything from your diet, it's just looking at what you are eating and going, how can I make this a little bit better? How can I make this a little bit more quality? And it might just be a case of adding an extra portion of fruit and veg a day. It might just be a case of saying, well, I'll maybe not have that ready meal, I'll maybe make something from scratch one night a week. And just looking at small sustainable changes. It's not about ripping it all up and starting again. That's completely unachievable for most people, but looking at what you're doing now and making it a little bit better is probably the key takeaway when it comes to nutrition. How am I off for time? Okay. Good. Right. So movement is a big one. Now, our kind of generation, if you're watching this, you're probably lately over 40. So our generation has kind of come through exercise in this Les Mills, high intensity, spin bikes, a lot of cardio, a lot of low intensity cardio with running and swimming, and a lot of higher intensity, but purely cardio with classes. Now, as we get older, that might not necessarily be the best way to support your body and getting fitter and stronger and trying to regain some of this muscle mass and trying to build some of this bone density. So we want to start looking at resistance training, and that can be quite nerve-wracking for some people. They're like, oh no, I don't want to go into the weights room, I don't want to go and lift weights in the gym. And it's, you don't need to go to a gym to do resistance training. I would say 90% of my clients probably do their training at home, just with a set of dumbbells and a kettlebell. And it's just about moving your body in a functional way. And if you think about, you know, nutrition potentially being the best tool you have to future-proof your health, exercise is the best tool you've got to future-proof your future independence and mobility. Like, if you want to be the 70-year-old woman that can put our cans of soup in the cupboard above her, you need to start getting resistance training into your life somehow. Now, it doesn't have to be this 5 days a week. Like, a lot of people don't have time to start a new exercise regime, and that's absolutely fine. Again, looking at how do we start it? And it might just be as simple as, well, I can do 20 minutes on a Tuesday and I can do 20 minutes on a Friday. And that is just enough to get you going to help you see that A, you can do it, because that's one of the challenges, is I've never done this before, but B, starting to build that into a lifestyle habit and treating it not as a, oh, I need to go and do this workout because I ate a packet of crisps. I need to go and do this workout so that I can get in and out of my car in 20 years' time. And it's not sexy, but starting to think with that mindset, with movement as not a tool for losing weight, it's a tool to help you live longer and healthier and happier. And I like to think about it as like, do you want to be the old lady that if she falls in the ice, that she can get up by herself? Or are you going to be the old lady that has to like wait for somebody to come and help her? And I think we all want to have that independence as we get older as well. So that's not to say that cardio is bad. It's not, because we also want to look after our respiratory health as we get older. It's just that in order to, you know, get this muscle mass back, get our metabolism working, get the bone density working, is, yeah, add in some resistance training. And one to always think about is, oh, I've never lifted weights before, it's quite scary. Always, if you've got kids, ask yourself, how old were your kids when you stopped lifting them to the bath? And guaranteed, that child is probably about 20 kilos, so you are absolutely fine for lifting weights. Don't look at those pink 2 kilo dumbbells and go, they're too heavy. They are not. You have lifted children. Remember that. You're stronger than you think. So that's probably it from a nutrition point of view. From a sleep point of view, now, we are horrific at sleep and sleep quality. We are tied to our phones 24/7. We have the attention span of your average adult in the UK has dropped from something like 13 seconds to 8 seconds in the space of 4 years, right? So since before COVID, that means we look at our phones for 7 seconds, 8 seconds, and just go, oh, I'm bored now, I need to move on to the next thing. So if you can imagine what that is doing to your dopamine levels and all these chemicals in your body, you're just constantly seeking the next big thing. And if we don't put our phones down and learn to relax before our bed, we are going to have crap sleep. And you might not think you're having crap sleep, but if you're not getting to a deep sleep stage and actually allowing your body to repair, to digest things that you've learned, then it's going to catch up on you. And that's kind of one of the things that might be potentially causing brain fog, tiredness in the latter half of the day. So, key tips for sleep. Put the phones down by 9 o'clock. All of you, everybody watching, 9 o'clock, absolutely non-negotiable. You want to make sure that you're not having your phone even in your room for your alarm. The wee light that gets emitted does crazy things to your head. I've covered up the wee red light in the telly in the bedroom as well, because I'm now like, I can see it. Making sure your room's as dark as possible, as cool as possible as well. And we're talking about hot flushes, having a cool room, cotton sheets, etc., are really going to help you have a more comfortable sleep as well, and help you get a more restful sleep where you can. Now, when we have things like hot flushes, it is going to impact on our sleep quality. There's no one size fits all solution, but looking at, you know, what you're putting into your body, are you hydrated enough? Are you eating the right foods? Are you trying to get as much rest as possible? Are you de-stressing, which we'll hand over to Isabel in a little minute. These are all things that we can all look to be doing at. Now, consistency with sleep is another big one, and trying to have, sounds really boring, doesn't it? Sound like I'm the mother of a toddler. Having a consistent bedtime and a consistent bedtime routine is really, really valuable. And if you are experiencing, like if you've got like a lot on your mind, career, business, whatever, having a wee notebook beside your bed is such a handy thing to do, because when all those mind hamsters start chatting away at 10:30, you've got somewhere to write the stuff down and you can pick it up in the morning and deal with it then. So I think that was it. I think that was everything that I wanted to cover off.
Amazing. Great. So many tips there.
Did I make it on time? I made it on time. Yes.
Emma was thinking she was going to need the big dong.
I was like, I'm going to need 3 hours for this to shut me off at midnight.
No, honestly, that was brilliant. Lots of tips. I've noted them all down. So thank you so much for taking the time to share those with us, Emma. And as I say, please do go and pop your, because I know you've got different programs and different things in this space, so do pop them in the comments underneath this as well, so people can get, ladies can get closer to you. Okay, so next up we have got Isabel Brown. So Isabel, after a lifelong interest in health and well-being, Isabel made a radical change from the corporate world and returned to formal study with the College of Naturopathic Medicine in London and qualified as a health and lifestyle coach. And Isabel is now the founder of the Health and Wellness Hub. Isabel, Health and Wellness Studio. Cannot read my writing. Isabel helps women with struggling with feelings of menopausal overwhelm through education and lifestyle change to embed sustainable habits that put them back in the driver's seat. Isabel's focus is going to be stress management. So just confirm for us again, Isabel, the name of your business. Did I totally mess that up there?
Sorry, what was that, Laura?
The name of your company.
It's Health and Wellbeing Studio.
Studio, right, brilliant. And pop the links underneath, so people can give you a follow. But Isabel, give us your session on stress management. This is one that I'm particularly looking forward to myself.
All right, if you weren't yanking Emma off, you'd probably be yanking me off, because you could go on forever on this topic. Anyway, what I thought I would do to try and make it a little bit hopefully concise, is thinking about the stress response and thinking about it maybe under three areas. So what is it? What does it do? And why can it become an issue? And then sharing a couple of things at the end is what you might be able to do to try and help yourselves with that. So I suppose, firstly, the stress response is that it's really natural and it is absolutely normal. We all experience it. And I think if we were talking about it, you'll probably recognize it more if I called it the flight or fight response, because most people would see it and have heard that more than they would maybe have heard stress response. So what actually happens is that the brain actually starts to pick up either a danger signal or a perceived danger signal. And when that actually happens, it releases, I thought it might be helpful to just understand what was going on there. So it releases a hormone called cortisol. And that hormone then goes off to do its job and get our bodies ready for fight or flight, away from this perceived or real danger. So to do that, what it then does is that it prioritizes certain body systems that we need to protect us, and it suppresses other body systems that it doesn't need right at that moment. So what it will do is that cortisol, adrenaline, it pumps sugar in the form of glucose into our bloodstream. That in turn then goes to our muscles. It's getting everything pumped up. It's all about energy. It's all about getting us on the move away from whatever this perceived or real danger might actually be. It also enhances the sensory organs, our peripheral vision improves, all of these things, so we can see where we're actually running, to. The areas that it would suppress areas like our immune system, our digestive system, because while we're running, we're not really sitting down needing lunch, so digestion's not needed. But it really lets you understand that if digestion gets suppressed with cortisol, you then understand why when stress triggers cortisol, we can end up with a lot of digestive problems as well. So we'll come back to that in a wee bit. So if any of you have actually heard sort of anybody discuss before anything to do with stress management, they will often use this sort of ancestral anecdote, you know, this fight or flight, we're running away from the predator, and this is what needs to happen. But the problem with today, the problem is that our body doesn't know the difference between running away from a predator or being triggered by the demands of life today. So while you're sitting tapping at the wheel in a traffic jam, or you're running against a work deadline, or you're running late for a meeting, or whatever it is that you're doing, or some of the big stresses that visit people, and that could be relationship issues, it could be health issues, it could be money worries, all of those things, the body doesn't distinguish between a saber-toothed tiger and one of those. It basically, the brain is picking up agitation, it's picking up anxieties. And so what it does is it releases
the whole cortisol thing that we've just mentioned there, with all of the on-flow effects that that can actually have. The biggest issue, and I don't think anybody would be surprised, is most women are running like mice on wheels today. And certainly a lot of the clients that I would see, maybe not so much 40s, but maybe in their 50s, many of them are also dealing with adult children, elderly parents, they're right in the middle of careers. All of that is happening and life is just going at 100 miles an hour. And it can be very, very difficult to feel that they can really get off that wheel. So add to that some of the symptoms that, you know, Pauline mentioned earlier. Just add menopause on top of normal everyday stress and you can really see what the average, if there is such a thing, what the average woman is actually dealing with. So when you look at that, you then think, okay, so all of that happens, but why does it matter? Well, it matters because of that downstream potential effect on health issues. And that is really what the talk is about and what we really want to avoid. It's again, as Emma just said, we can think so close to home. We can think about our 30s and 40s, but the reality, one day we're all going to be 50s, 60s, 70s, and we want to be fabulous 50s, 60s, and 70s. So we want to make sure that this health is absolutely not caught up in downstream of what happens when we're in stress mode. So when we do look at ourselves as women, hormones are really like thermostats. They regulate our body functions, and stress is probably one of the biggest hormone disruptors that we actually have. So if we look at that, it manifests on all sorts of areas, everything from it could be thyroid issues, it could be weight gain, disrupted sleep, all of the things that have been mentioned before, digestive issues, low mood. Now, stress may not cause those things. They may be caused by other stuff, but it certainly can exacerbate and make it really harder. So the more that we can do to, I suppose, support ourselves in the broadest possible sense, so much the better. So for me, those stress reduction practices are really important. But they can be hard, and not hard because they're difficult, hard because when we're already emotionally off balance, then just taking on anything can feel like another demand on time that we already feel that we don't have. And but the reality is that you can't pour from an empty cup. Great old saying, but it's so true. And sometimes you really just need to look and you need to draw a line in the sand and make that commitment towards some self-care. Now, a big flag can happen when I hear people saying things like, look, it's not just me, this is life, we're all the same, we're all running like this. You just need to be careful of that, because you're almost then accepting that it's okay to be stressed, or you're rationalizing that it's okay to be stressed. But the reality is that no, it's not okay to feel like this. And as I say, it's not a great feeling to be in to begin with. And the potential downstream health issues can really, it's just not where we want to go. So I think one of the biggest issues is that those boundaries between working life and even our personal life have become so blurred these days. And that was just exacerbated more and more during the pandemic. I mean, women were feeding families at 6:30 and back on computers from 7:30 till 11 o'clock at night, trying to homeschool and do everything in between. The other thing as well is that when you do look at things, we are constantly available these days. So whether it is on the phone, on Facebook, on texts, on whatever, we are just overstimulated on so many ways, which Emma touched on just a second ago. But in amongst these hugely demanding 24-hour periods, we really need to put some time in for ourselves. And that's you know, that's where I'm going to start wrapping up there. So when we look at it, we've got to find ways of downregulating that nervous system and trying to help ourselves just get into a bit of a place of calm. Because when we're in a place of calm, you've got a better chance of maybe applying a wee bit more rational thought to how you're feeling, rather than being in this whirlwind of emotional overwhelm. So what I'm going to say to you doesn't mean to say that you have to do this every single day and bring all of it, because I think what was really relevant as well was Emma's comment about things need to be embedded, and they need to be embedded and be made sustainable. Otherwise, it becomes like a New Year resolution. You're going to kill it all today. By February, it's all gone. This is stuff that you really want to start bringing into your life in order to protect your life sort of going ahead. So three things I'm going to suggest to you that would be great for you to do. Really simple, but you will probably say, I don't have time. Who's got the time? They're so simple, but they're still considered fantastic stress busters. The first thing is walking, any form of exercise, but I'm looking at everything I'm suggesting tonight is no cost. So no gym memberships, no nothing, all no cost. So the big one of the biggest ones, let's just think about walking. And even if you start that 15 minutes a day, that 15 minutes is fantastic. And I mean walking, not talking. You're not on the phone. You're not answering anyone. This is time for you. It's just about allowing yourself to be. And if you go from 15 minutes to half an hour or even longer, that's even better. Green space in a park, better again. But ultimately, grab that 15 minutes for you. So walking is number one. The second thing I wanted to highlight to you is breathing exercises. And we might say, but we all breathe. We do, but we don't breathe well these days. We breathe so shallow. And we know that if we're in a stress situation, you see people gulping. We breathe shallow in general terms. And yet, if we learn to breathe a bit more deeply, we can do a lot of different things to calm the nervous system and do some great things for digestion and a lot of other stuff that goes on there as well. Now, we don't have time tonight to go through those practices. So what I'm going to suggest you do is that you have a look online. And you might sort of Google, you know, breathing for stress or breathing for sleep or breathing for whatever. And you will find lots of things on there. Another one to look at is the double breath. And that was first out there in about the 1930s, and psychologists still use it today. And it's something that you really feel it can sort of switch off that massive stress response signal quite quickly. So have a look for the double breath as well. Great for calming the nervous system. And then the third one I want to just suggest to you is connection, because I think we're losing connection. I think we talk about talking to people, and what we mean is we've texted them and we're losing that connection. Now, I know that I've found myself in situations where I've maybe caught up with a friend and we have a coffee. And by the end of it, we think, God, we need to do this more. Why don't we do this more? Because we're caught up with life and we're all running like mice on wheels, yet we've solved the problems of the world. We've, you know, we've had a laugh, we've reminisced, you name it, we've done it. And we don't have enough connection. So get on the phone and make time for a cup of coffee with just somebody you want to have a chat with, and actually just make it about you. So as I say, three things, no cost to any of them: walking, breathing, connection. But all of them are such part of just, I suppose, feeling valued and feeling at one with yourself and with other people. And lastly, I'm going to leave you with two little hacks. First one, lavender oil. Got to be lavender oil, 100% oil. None of this lavender essence, probably highly unlikely to be on a supermarket shelf. So lavender oil, 2-3 drops in a palm of your hand, warm it up, 2 or 3 deep breaths, and you actually will find yourself calming. That's why it's in all these products for pillow sprays, etc. Lavender is very, very good. And the second hack is an Epsom salts bath. Now, don't go for the fancy stuff. Don't look at, go for the 3-pound packet, big giant bag of Epsom salts, and chuck half of it in a warm bath. Now, Epsom salts is full of magnesium. You'll absorb magnesium, and magnesium is really renowned for restful sleep. And when you're stressed and hormonal, restful sleep is a real priority. So get those Epsom salts into a bath, and that's the night to have an early night. That's not your binging on Netflix night. That's your early night. And I probably will wind up by just inviting you ladies to think about, is there anything there that you could maybe introduce in the next 30 days? Because you know what? 30 days passes anyway. But you either get to the end of those 30 days with no change, or you get to the end of those 30 days and maybe there's just a wee light at the end of the tunnel somewhere that you feel that you've prioritized you. And I think that is what's really important, because as women, we are so often at the end of the queue when it comes to just looking after ourselves, and we deserve to be looked after. So yeah, that's for me. And I look forward to reading all these things that you've done in the group, and I hope you have some success there. Thanks for having us.
Isabel, thank you so much. That was amazing. Again, I have been scribbling so many notes from you as well. And I don't know about anybody else, but when you were talking about the breathing, how we're all so guilty of shallow breathing, I was like, notice that I'm literally just breathing right here. It's not even good. I was like, yes, you can breathe more deeply. You don't have to just be all up here all the time. So thank you so much. That was absolutely brilliant. Okay, so next up we have Dr. Claire McCauley. Claire is an oncology doctor who treats people with breast cancer. She's also a certified somatic sex educator who is passionate about supporting people to create the kind of sex life that is right for them. Claire has a particular interest in working with people who are in the perimenopausal or menopausal phase of life, whether naturally occurring or as a consequence of medical treatment. Claire's focus for the session tonight will be vaginal pain and dryness in relation to sex and the menopause. So please step forward, Dr. Claire McCauley.
Hi, Laura. It's lovely to be here. I'm here hopefully to instill some pleasure into the evening, because what I'm really mindful of is that often when we talk about the perimenopause and menopause, it's all about, oh, it's shit and it's this and you get hot flushes and it's that and all the rest of it. But actually, there is also a huge opportunity in this point in our lives to take stock, to decide what's important to us, to take action, like we've heard from Emma and from Isabel about how we might want to make our lives better for ourselves, and actually to move ourselves up the pecking order of things that we pay attention to in our lives, and actually move ourselves from sometimes beneath what the dog needs, at least to start moving our needs up. And my passion is about supporting people to have the sex lives that they want, because pleasure is such an important and healing part of what it means to be a human. And often what we find is when people get to this midlife phase is that they've lost some connection with their sexual selves. The hormonal changes that we've heard about have an effect on the body that we're going to talk, I'm going to talk specifically about what happens in your pants. And also a big part of what I do is about dealing with people's sense of libido or sex drive. But we're going to focus tonight on pain, because it doesn't matter. I could fix your sex drive all you like, but actually if it's painful, you're not going to do it anyway, because who wants to have sex that's painful? So, but the point of all of this is really to be really, really clear that you could be having the best sex of your life right now, if that's what you chose. Now, if you've been having shitty sex that you don't really want to be having, the menopause gives you the perfect excuse to get out of that. I'm not suggesting that anybody should be having sex that they're not enjoying. But the point is that there is a point, this at this point in our lives, it gives us a choice to reprioritize what these things mean in our lives and what we want for our lives. And also to get back in touch with who our sexual self is, because actually at this point in our life, if we can be really in touch with our sexuality, it is our life force energy. It is the thing that gets shit done in the world. And if you are getting to that point in your life where you think, actually, I've got things I want to do here in the world, I've got a mission to achieve, I've got things I want to get done, I realize now that actually life is short and precious, then actually being in touch with your sexuality is a really important part of that. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to introduce you to, this is Verity. This is Verity, my velvet vulva. I don't go anywhere without my vulva.
Welcome,
Verity.
And
the reason
Verity.
For bringing her, you've met her before, Laura. The reason for bringing her in is to highlight a little bit more some of the things that Pauline spoke about in terms of what is actually happening. So we know that about 50 to 70% of people who are perimenopausal and menopausal will have some difficulty with their sex life. Okay, so let's just sink that in. If you think about a group of your friends, say 10 of you together, at least 5 of you of a certain age are having problems in your sex life and no one is talking about it. If that was erectile dysfunction, we would all be talking about it if we were talking about male sexuality. But there is this real difficulty, I think, sometimes about talking about sexuality, which is why I've become known as Dr. Dry Fanny. That's how I am known in the world, because I talk about this kind of stuff all the time, because I think it's really, really important that we understand what's happening in our bodies. So if we look at Verity and we think about what Pauline told us about dropping levels of estrogen, the most exquisitely sensitive tissues in our body to estrogen are the things in our pants. So we'll start here. Imagine here, these are our outer labia. So these are the parts of our vulva that are usually covered in hair, or not if you choose to remove it. But then we have our inner labia here, or our inner lips. We have the little hood. This is called the clitoral hood. This is the hood of skin that covers up the clitoris, or the glands of the clitoris, or the head of the clitoris, which is underneath. And then we have the vaginal vault itself here with the G-spot in the front. And between these two, your clitoris and your vagina, represented by this little rose, is our urethra. That's where we pee out of. You do actually have three holes. In case we've made it to this age and we think we pee out of our vagina, you don't. You have a separate hole here that's called the urethra. Now, all of these structures and the things above it, so that's your pelvic floor, and your bladder above that, all of these tissues are exquisitely sensitive to estrogen. They require estrogen to work well. And if at the perimenopause, when your estrogen levels are all over the place, and then through the menopause and beyond, when your estrogen levels drop, these tissues start to die off. And I mean that, they start to disappear. So one thing I would love people to go away with now is, I don't think anybody told you that your fanny might disappear. So first and foremost, let's be really, really clear that these tissues will become thinner. The skin will be thinner. You might lose sensation in your clitoris. You might lose fullness in the lips of your labia. All of those things, if you are sitting now going, oh, actually, I kind of thought that, but I thought it couldn't possibly be true. It is absolutely true. And it happens to about 40 to 50% of people going through the menopause. So if nothing else, what I want you to know is that these things that are happening in your pants are real. Your orgasms may be less available to you. They may not be as strong. You may not lubricate in the same way. You may have less sensation. It may take you longer to get to orgasm if you get there at all. All of those things are absolutely happening to you. You're not imagining them. There's not something deeply wrong with you. It's not something psychological. It's actually physically happening in your body. So I'm going to put Verity down, because what that's all great, Claire, but what we're going to do about it is really what we need to concentrate on. And as Pauline described, there are many symptoms of the menopause, and many of the symptoms of the menopause will get better with time. So hot flushes might get better, brain fog might get better, fatigue and tiredness might get better as we get through the menopause. But if you have this problem, which is called the genitourinary syndrome of menopause, or another term that's often used is called vaginal atrophy, if you have that problem, it is not going to get better with time. And if anything, it's likely to get worse. So I want people to know this stuff early on, so that if they have some of this experience and they're starting to lose sensation or losing orgasm, or they've got pain when you're having intercourse, for example, or dryness, you're not lubricating in the same way, then there are lots of things that you can do to help, and it will not get better with time. So don't wait. Okay, so there's three main things that I want people to know about vaginal dryness. One, that it's real, and the three things that we can do to help it. So the first thing is to split the categories of what we can do into hormonal methods that we can use to manage it and non-hormonal methods. So we'll start with the non-hormonal methods first. We are of the age where you moisturize your face, you moisturize your fanny. It is now not negotiable. Okay, so we very often don't have a relationship with this part of our body, because we may never have had a relationship with this part of our body. And a lot of the work that I do is about helping people to create a relationship with their vulva, with their sexuality, so that we can take care of it, because what we're not in connection with, we're unlikely to take care of. So moisturizing your vulva is now non-negotiable. I'm sorry to tell you. And there are numbers of different ways that you can do that. You can use specialized vaginal moisturizing products, and you can buy them over the counter. There are actually some that you can get on prescription if you have this problem. But you can also simply use any edible oil. Coconut oil is my favorite, but you can use sweet almond oil. You can use other kinds of oils. And that does two things. One is that it moisturizes and protects the skin. And the rest of your genitals, but it also helps you to create a relationship with your genitals, to be mindful, to take care of, so that you can notice if there are any changes. So moisturizers, specific vaginal moisturizers that you can buy or get on prescription, or any edible oil. The second non-hormonal aspect is about using lube. Now, we've got a lot of societal conditioning around the fact that we should always be wet and, you know, we should be able to make enough of our own lube, et cetera, et cetera. And sometimes people feel quite shy or quite ashamed about lubrication. When you get to our age, it is non-negotiable. It is one of those things that you need to find a way to incorporate into your self-pleasure practice, into any interactions that you might have with a part with your partner or partners. So thinking about ways in which you can use lube that feel good to you, because you should not be having painful sex. If you are having painful sex, there is a problem and you need to get help with that problem, because if it's at this age and it's due to this problem, it's unlikely to get better on its own. So finding ways to get good with lube, finding ways to incorporate it into your self-pleasure practice, your your practice with your partner, your relationship with your partner that feels good. And think about using a lube that's specifically designed for menopausal fannies. So there are certain things that we need to think about, which is looking for a pH balanced. So you want to look for a pH balanced lube. The pH of our vagina changes as we age, and it goes from a more acidic environment to a less acidic environment. And we want to use lubes that help promote that acidity, because it changes when the pH balance, that's the acidity in our vagina, changes as we age. It also changes the types of bugs that grow there. And it means that the bugs that can cause things like urinary tract infections can start to grow more readily in our vagina. And then it's only a quick hop, step and a jump to give us a UTI, for example. That's why people tend to get more UTIs as they get older, because of all this problem and because our urinary symptom system is more susceptible to becoming infected, but also because the bugs that grow down there are changing as we age. The main treatment in terms of, so those things will help with the symptoms, but they won't solve the underlying problem, which is that your fanny is dying off because of a lack of estrogen. We can use vaginal estrogens locally in the vagina. And that means that we can use small tablets that have estrogen in them and or creams that we use in the vagina locally to help restore that vaginal estrogen and help these tissues to recover to a certain degree and to stay healthy. And it can be an absolute game changer for people. I have seen women who can't sit down, who can't ride a bike, who can't wipe themselves, and vaginal estrogen is extremely effective at treating this problem. Now, you can use vaginal estrogen whether you choose or don't choose to use other hormone replacement therapy, HRT. You can use it along with HRT, and you could just use it on its own. If your main problem is in relation to the vaginal symptoms and you don't have lots of night sweats and hot flushes, then you can use vaginal estrogen on its own. It is supremely effective. And I would suggest that if you are at home, you're watching this and you think, that's me, please do not wait. Your GP will know all about it. It's something that you can try. It takes about 12 weeks to have its best effect, but it can be an absolute game changer for people. And there are very, very few people who can't have that treatment. And if you use it and it works for you, then you need to know that that's likely to be a lifelong treatment. Well, as lifelong as you want to have a functioning fanny for anyway. So understanding that the process by which that happens, if you start treatment and it works, if you stop it again, the problem will come back, because it's to do with this lack of estrogen. So that's what I want to say to people. Dry fanny is a real thing. Nobody will have told you about it. It might be something you didn't even know was coming for you. It is coming for one in two of us at this age, and it is hugely treatable. And please don't wait. If you have it, there are lots of things that we can do to help.
Wow. I feel like my heart's going. I think you really got me at your fanny might disappear. I was like, wow, mic drop. But actually, what was so positive about that was all the things that can be done with, you know, that situation, or women that are feeling these symptoms that you've spoke about. So,
and we don't talk about it, Laura. That's the problem. How would you know? If you came along tonight, you didn't know that, how else would you have known? Because no one is talking about it, which is why I became called Dr. Dry Fanny, because that's all I talk about, because I want people to know. You can make decisions once you know. You can stop worrying once you know. You can take control of things once you know. So it's really, really important that people understand that it is a real thing.
Yeah, totally. And knowledge is power. And I think you'll forever be known in the GGC now as Dr. Dry Fanny. And also, again, never even mentioned the name of your business at the start, the pleasure possibility, Claire.
So the pleasure possibility is where we have these conversations. Anybody who wants to join is watching this, or you've got friends, you're welcome to come over. It's a free Facebook group. We talk about specifically about sex and menopause and perimenopause, and we'll put the links below.
Brilliant. Fabulous. Okay, great. We're on an absolute roll now. So up next, ladies, we have Claire Hunter. Claire Hunter of Claire Hunter Consultant and Apothecary. Claire prescribes herbal medicines for women struggling with hormonal imbalance during menopause. Claire helps women feel more in control by reducing symptoms like hot flushes, irregular bleeding, and sleep disturbances. Herbal medicines can be used to help restore the nervous system, reduce anxiety, and nourish the adrenals, helping to improve energy levels. Claire's session tonight will focus on how herbal medicines support hormonal balance by working on the pituitary, liver, nervous system, and adrenals. She would also like to touch on botanicals that can be used to reduce symptoms associated with the menopause. So welcome, Claire.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate that. It's been so interesting to listen to everybody. I've been really enjoying that, actually. So I realise that a lot of people now are buying a lot of different herbal supplements over the counter. Women will be very aware of sage for hot flushes, but there's much more to herbal medicine than just that. So there's several different ways that we would approach the menopause from a herbalist point of view. So there's kind of five main ways that we'd look at supporting somebody going through the menopause. So the first one is looking at hormonal tonics. So herbs or botanicals that can actually directly impact on our hormones. So number one is actually a plant called Vitex agnoscastus or chaste tree berry. And that works on the pituitary gland in the brain to actually regulate our hormones from the top down. And it can be really useful for women when they're still menstruating. And it's not so useful for people when they've stopped menstruating. So it's when I wouldn't really recommend it. But if your periods are irregular, if they're very heavy, if they're painful, if there's any kind of imbalance in timing, so like I think one of the ladies were saying earlier about how periods can be quite frequent, then they can be very irregular, not come for months at a time. Chaste tree berry can be really, really useful for that. There's some other hormonal tonics as well, such as red clover and hops, which have phytoestrogens in them, which again can help support the estrogen levels in the bodies. So phytoestrogens are weakly estrogenic. They fit into the same receptors that our normal estrogen fits into and weakly stimulate the cell, which can actually be quite protective against exogenous estrogens and protective against things like breast cancer. But they also help to give some support when estrogen levels are low. So people can be taking these types of herbs around about perimenopause and menopause time to kind of supplement their own natural estrogen production. I wouldn't generally recommend those types of herbs if somebody's taking HRT, because really it's kind of pointless at that stage. The HRT is going to be much more dominant. So I wouldn't necessarily be using those herbs at that point. So another way we'd look at herbal medicine supporting the body would be how we can use herbs to work on the liver. So the liver does over 500 functions, I think, in the body. And during menopause, there's even more required of our livers during this time to break down hormones and balance the hormones. The liver's involved in energy function. It helps keep blood glucose levels stable, and it helps to synthesize hormones as well. So when we're looking at this organ being under pressure around about the menopause, we're wanting to take liver tonics. So I think most people may have heard about milk thistle now. Milk thistle is what we call a liver trophil restorative. So it actually helps to restore liver cells, and it's detoxifying as well. So it helps the liver improve its function, but also help build up the liver to work as effectively as it possibly can do again. So it's a great one to ask women if their alcohol tolerance is kind of going downhill, if you get a flush when you're having a glass of wine, or if you're just getting crashing hangovers or headaches after drinking alcohol. Milk thistle is a really, really useful herb. But there's other liver tonics as well, dandelion roots. So if you suffer from constipation, dandelion roots are a bit of a bitter tonic. It helps to increase bowel production, stuff in the stools, and increase bowel motion. So that can be quite useful if people are more on the sluggish side. And then there's lots of other bitter types of herbs as well that we can have that can be really quite beneficial. And bitter foods in general, again, eating those can help support liver function. So then we look at how we can actually minimise and reduce stress levels in the body. And this kind of splits off into two areas. So we've got nervous system herbs and we've got adrenal tonics. So the nervous system herbs or nervous system trophorestoratives, again, they help to nourish and restore the nervous system. And I always think of it like our nervous system being like a rope. So when we've been under long-term stress and strain, this rope's under pressure and it comes quite frayed and it can end up being quite fragile. So nervous system restoratives rebuild that strength in our system, and we're not able to necessarily take away the stresses and strains that are in our lives, but we're able to handle it a lot better. So we become more stronger, more resilient. And I think Isabel was talking about how during around about menopausal, perimenopausal time, we really are very, very stretched. We have sometimes older parents that we're caring for, we've got children, and we're at the pinnacle of our career, and literally we're just being pulled and stretched in all different directions. So these type of herbs can come in, be really useful in terms of building resilience and strength and help us actually withstand these pressures and strains. So a lot of people will have heard of some of these herbs. So St. John's wort's a real well-known one now, and it's a great herb. It's often known as an antidepressant, but it does much, much more. So as I say, it builds resilience, it actually improves energy levels, it's an anxiolytic herb, so it reduces anxiety. It also has some other functions as well, so it's an antiviral, so if you're prone to cold sores and other types of bugs from viruses, it can be quite useful in building your system back up again. But there's other ones too, because St. John's wort is a bit of a problematic herb for people, and it's something that everybody should be aware of because it has quite a lot of contraindications and interactions with medications. So if you're on SSRIs, so antidepressants, you shouldn't take it because it can actually cause too much serotonin in your system and cause serotonin syndrome. So you don't want to take it if you're already on an antidepressant. You don't want to take it with any medication where you have to have a specific level in your blood system. So if you're on lithium, if you're on warfarin, or the contraceptive pill, do not take St. John's wort, because St. John's wort actually increases the phase two liver enzymes and clears these medications out of your body too quickly. And so you won't have the effective levels in your system for them to be therapeutic. So please be aware, if you're wanting to take a nervous system restorative and you're on certain medications, check with your GP, check with the herbalist, make sure they're safe. It's a big thing. However, there's other nervous system restoratives you can take which are very safe. So there's skullcap, which is very similar to St. John's wort but without the interactions, and then there's good old oats. So there's where we come into how herbal medicine actually crosses over into food state plants. So even eating porridge every morning, it's full of B vitamins, which is great for the nervous system, it's great for balancing blood sugars, it's very building, restorative, but it actually helps to support your energy levels as well. So that's the nervous system. The adrenal glands are very important. These are two glands that sit above the kidneys, and they produce your adrenaline, your cortisol, your stress hormones. Now, when we're under pressure and strain, the adrenals are having to work quite hard. And if we're under strains that are kind of consistent and long term, the adrenals can become a bit depleted because they're constantly producing adrenaline and cortisol. So if you're thinking that you might be in this category, looking at having adrenal tonics in your daily diet or your lifestyle, taking them regularly, can be really beneficial for helping to restore the adrenals. So these are the type of herbs I would class as adaptogenic tonics, and again have become hugely popular, kind of almost to this stage that they're trending now, which I find absolutely hilarious, because when I started herbal medicine, when I got involved in the industry, when I was going back about 20-25 years now, people just thought I was a right weirdo. Now everybody's taking mushrooms and, you know, Siberian ginseng and, you know, all these other things. I just think like, yeah, okay, I'm not quite a weirdo anymore. So adrenal tonics are classic herbs like Siberian ginseng. There's rhodiola, which is again trending quite heavily just now. Licorice is another one. So with these types of herbs, they build foundational energy levels. So if you think about how a cup of coffee or a can of Coke, if you drink that stuff, gives you that energy, gives you that boost, but there's always that crash afterwards. You know, it's not going to give you that kind of long-term energy that you need. herbs like adrenal tonics, they work quite slowly, but they do really help build up your foundational energy levels. They're great for kind of fatigue, chronic fatigue, long-lasting tiredness, and around about menopausal years, these can be a real issue. So it's something you take low dose and you take it long term. You're really looking at like kind of 4 to 6 weeks minimum and more like 3 months, but they can be really beneficial in terms of just supporting your body against the negative impacts of stress. So the other things I want to think about or talk about today is really how we focus on reducing the symptoms of the menopause. So there's a classic things like night sweats and hot flushes. So sage, regular sage that you can buy in supermarkets, that is a key herb here. It's very cooling on the system. It helps actually reduce anxiety as well. There's another one called black cohosh, which some people might have heard about. It's got a little bit of a reputation sometimes on the internet because there was some adulterated herbs going around which actually caused some liver damage. So you do have to be careful about where you're buying your herbal products from. Try and get them from a reputable source. But again, black cohosh can be quite useful because with a lot of herbs, they actually do not just one thing, but several different things. Black cohosh is great for night sweats, for hot flushes, fantastic for joint aches and pains, but it also has that anxiolytic property. So it helps to calm the body down and reduce anxiety. Other symptoms that people might come across, which should be mentioned tonight as well, brain fog, poor memory and concentration. There's a range of herbs for this. Now, when somebody's having issues with hot flushes, you don't want to go for something like rosemary, which is a classic herb for memory and concentration, because it's quite heating in the system. It's a circulatory tonic and we do not want any more heat in the system at all. So we want to go for herbs which have got more of a cooling nature. So we've got things like gota cola and bacopa, which are great for supporting memory and concentration. I also want to kind of just touch on the mushrooms, medicinal mushrooms. They're so fantastic. And again, a lot of them are actually very good for brain capacity. Lion's mane specifically is actually being shown to help people who've had brain damage and prevent against things like Parkinson's and dementia. So if you have these things in your family history, again, maybe taking these type of herbs earlier on, your kind of low dose long term can be quite preventative in terms of you know, keeping these familial conditions at bay. So other issues we'd look at are low mood. Obviously, I've mentioned anxiety. Again, the nervous system restoratives can be quite useful for that, St. John's wort, but there's a range of other things, skullcap that I mentioned, and rhodiola actually is an adrenal tonic, great for lifting mood, but there's lots of other herbs as well. And it's worthwhile, this is why you buy lots of things over the counter, but you can end up sitting there with literally like 10 different bottles and you're taking all these different supplements and you're rattling. It's so useful to actually speak to herbalists because they can then say, right, okay, you've got this symptom, you've got that symptom, you've got these other symptoms, right, I'm going to prescribe these maybe 5 or 6 different herbs, I'm going to put it in a bottle for you and create a formulation specific for your needs, which when you're kind of in overwhelm and you're dealing with lots of different issues can be really helpful. So other problems that women can sometimes have are, you know, excessively heavy periods. I know one of the ladies who was first talking mentioned about how difficult it can be when you're experiencing menopausal flooding. You can't leave your house because literally you can't actually control the flow of blood. And obviously this can be dangerous at some points. You can actually lose too much blood. It's a medical emergency. So you do need to be aware about how much blood you're losing. But there's astringent tonics that herbalists can prescribe or you can get over the counter as well, such as Shepherd's Purse, Bethroot, which can be taken throughout the course of the month or in higher doses around about your period time, which can be really useful in reducing heavy bleeding. There's obviously drugs you can get for your doctor from that as well, but if you want to try a more natural approach, there's certainly herbal medicines for that. So just a wee note on if you are going to take herbal medicines, just always check if you're on any medications already that there's no interactions or contraindications. There are some herbs which you need to be careful with that. And then Just a wee aside as well, when usually you see herbalists, sometimes get prescribed some supplements. And I don't know if anybody else is talking about that tonight, but just want to mention for bone health, being on a supplement such as calcium, magnesium and boron can be really good for helping to maintain calcium levels in the body and deposition into the bones, as long as it's combined with weight-bearing exercise, or even I think it's as well saying walking regularly, you know, but exercise combined with diet and supplements, you really have to look at all things there. Then looking at your vitamin D as well. In Scotland, we tend to be covered up a lot. You know, we tend to wear a lot of SPFs in our makeup. So making sure we actually have vitamin D either in our diet or supplements, and then omega oils too. So making sure we're lubricating our bodies through our diet, oily fish, nuts, seeds, avocados, or taking an omega oil supplement to help lubricate our systems from the inside. Because all these things I've mentioned, they're really useful at balancing hormones, and these omega oils, again, really good at supporting that hormonal balance. It's just about looking at all these different areas that we can kind of tie in together and bring in as a kind of full package when we're looking at herbal medicine, diet and supplements.
Absolutely brilliant, Claire. Thank you so much for this. And am I right in thinking you work from a GP practice in Park Circus?
That's great, yeah.
Brilliant. And you offer video consultations as well, don't you?
That's right.
Great, because from listening to all that, it definitely sounds as though it would be good to come to a herbalist like yourself and actually get something completely tailored to what a woman's going through with her journey.
Yeah, I think it works better that way, because a lot of people can try things over the counter and they might try one or two things or maybe not for long enough, and sometimes it goes, oh, it doesn't work. But, you know, usually you'll get a kind of protocol from a herbalist and they'll tell you kind of how long to stick with it as well, because this was a very whistle-stop tour tonight. There's a lot of stuff in there, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff on the internet as well that people can read about. But yeah, it's definitely worthwhile seeing a herbalist.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thank you so much for that. Okay, so last but certainly not least, we have got the fabulous Jean Fenwick. So throughout our kind of journey and chats tonight, we've been focusing kind of more largely on the physical aspects of menopause. But now we're going to come on to the more kind of mindset aspects of menopause. So Jean Fenwick, founder of Inner Wealth Coach, is an award-winning midlife empowerment coach, certified mindset coach, hypnotherapist, and founder of the Inner Wealth Coaching. She helps women 40 plus thrive through perimenopause and the challenges of midlife. Jean understands what it's like to have a difficult time in perimenopause. She felt that she was going mad. Unable to take HRT, she explored alternative methods to cope with her brain fog, anxiety and low self-esteem. Now postmenopausal, she enjoys life to the full, using her own experiences and learning to help hundreds of women globally. So step forward, Jean.
Hey, thanks very much, Laura. Thank you very much for having me here. I have thoroughly enjoyed this evening, and I'm just hoping my internet connection stays okay, because it lost stability throughout a little bit. But wow, this has been fantastic. And, you know, so many takeaways. I've made loads and loads of notes. And the thing that really is resonating with me as a postmenopausal woman, and I went through my menopause 15 years ago, so I've had a lot of years post-menopause, and I'm just sitting here absolutely thrilled at how much knowledge is out there for younger women today. It is just mind-blowing. And you know, I came across an interesting fact a couple of years ago when I was doing some menopause awareness work for organizations, and that was, you know, this term perimenopause was coined, I don't know who knows this, but it was coined, I certainly didn't know it, back in the 1930s by two gynecologists. You know, who knew? I don't think my mother knew, and she was born in 1934, and I certainly didn't know when I was going through my perimenopause. It just wasn't a thing. And it's only in these recent years that we're getting all this amazing information out there to help us deal with, cope with, and have the knowledge and the tools to be able to transition. So, but I'm not here to talk about that. I'm here to talk about mindset, and I'm here to talk about hypnosis because I'm a hypnotherapist. And I want to very, very briefly talk about how we can use our mindset to help us transition through perimenopause journey and beyond. And very, very briefly, I'm just going to describe just a couple of things we need to know about the mind and the brain. Some of you may know them already. But, you know, our brain is a really complex organ, isn't it? It's probably the most complex organ in our bodies. So when we look at mindset work, it helps really just to break the mind down into two key components. So I'm just going to talk about the conscious part of your mind, which is the logical thinking part, the one that makes decisions, the one that will help us set goals and basically do life, get our Excel spreadsheets together, etc. And then the rest of our brain, which is our unconscious brain, broken down into very many different components, but let's just call it conscious brain, unconscious brain. And that unconscious part of our mind runs 90% of what happens for us. So 90% of our behaviour, 90% of our reality is controlled by our unconscious mind. And our unconscious mind is the seat of our emotions. It's the seat of all of the experiences. Every single thing that's happened to you up until today is stored there in the unconscious mind. And a hypnotist can get in there and find out, you know, how people can say, remember all their phone numbers, you know, if they're on stage. Well, the type of hypnosis we do, of course, isn't that type of hypnosis. But knowing that so much of our reality is controlled by our unconscious mind, which runs all of our beliefs, all of our thinking, all of your values are stored there. And having a wonderful way to be in charge of your unconscious mind is where mindset work comes in. So essentially, what mindset work does is it transforms the way that you do life. So it's more than, some people will think of mindset work and they'll immediately think, oh, well, you know, it's positive affirmations, isn't it? And it's, you know, positive thinking and law of attraction and manifestations. And, you know, all of those tools are very, very common within mindset work, and they're all excellent tools. But the truth is that nothing happens to change your mindset unless, one, you make a decision that there's something you want to change. So you have to make a decision to want to change anyway. And I think that's absolutely crucial. It's nothing will happen until you make that decision. And secondly, the great tool to use in mindset is using the power of intention, using the power of awareness, and actually being really, really conscious of what it is that we're planning to do each day. Because the truth is that we're ruled by the past. Everything that has happened to us up until now has been running how we do life. So unless we make a decision to change and then intentionally choose some of the habits, behaviours, tools that have been shared here tonight, then nothing's actually going to happen. So I love, Isabel, that you said, you know, the 30-day rule, you know, make a plan, actually decide what you want to do, because those are the first things that have to happen. The decision and the choice to live intentionally, because that will help create us what we have in our minds today. Because the other great news about mindset is it isn't fixed, it's malleable, and we can change our mindset. And the way that we do that is by learning to change some of the key drivers of our mindset. So our beliefs, our thoughts, our beliefs will drive our thinking, and our thinking will drive your emotions and how you're feeling. And that will create your reality, what shows up with you, your behaviour, how you are in life. So mindset will change your perspective on life. It will change how you show up. So as far as the menopause experience goes, let's bring it into menopause now. So there's really good research out there that shows that how we experience the mindset is very, very much based on type of beliefs that we have around mindset and the thinking that we have around mindset. And I think it's quite incredible to know that in this Western culture that we live in, we do mindset in a very, very different way from some of the other cultures, specifically some of the Eastern cultures. You know, for an example, you will know probably that in China, they call the menopause their second spring. You may not know that in Japan, they didn't have a word for hot flush. There was no such word for hot flush because Japanese women weren't experiencing hot flushes. So some journalist did some research on the West and came up with this fabulous word, or two words together, hotofashura. Hotofashura is Japanese for hot flush because the women in Japan just weren't experiencing it. So where we, how we imagine and our beliefs on anything in life, but on our menopause, will have an effect on it. And in societies where older isn't better, our society, where older brings so many negative connotations, and we've talked about some of those already this evening, then what we need to do with mindset work is to flip them, because our mindset creates a reality. So what we're believing, we need to look at, well, what am I believing? You know, what am I believing about being older? You know, my believing the old stories about being over the hill, this is it, you know, I'm aging, I'm past it. You know, those old stories that run very, very deeply within us, things that we might have picked up from, you know, grannies, aunties, other women around us, you know, challenge those beliefs, you know, have a good think about them first, dig for them, challenge them and change them and reframe them, because we can change those beliefs that we have. Think about what you're saying to yourself about perimenopause, what you're saying to yourself about your symptoms. Oh God, you know, this is awful, it's dreadful, I'll never, you know, all that negative stuff, which naturally comes up in our head when we've got pain, when we've got discomfort, when we're not getting to sleep at night, you know, the stress particularly that we're under can drag us into that negativity. But, you know, we do live, as has been explained, a third of our life postmenopausal. Hopefully I'm going for a bit longer than that. And so it's really, really important that we manage to find a way to reframe those beliefs, thoughts, all the old past conditioning that actually run us in terms of what is happening for us in our life. So we've got the tools, we've got the knowledge from this evening. So I would strongly say my tips would be, you know, make that decision that you're actually going to do something with the information that we've been given. Make a decision that you want to be really intentional about how you go about your day. And think about challenging yourself whenever any of those negative, I call them mind monkeys, come in. When any of those mind monkeys come up, just see if you can catch yourself. You know, you can't do it straight away. It takes time, it takes a wee bit of effort. But just see if you can get maybe just a wee bit better at catching yourself falling into that negativity. Just practice, because practice is what helps us build muscle. And we build muscle in our brain because we're making new neural connections here. So just as we're building muscle in the gym with Emma, think about how we're building new neural pathways in our brain by choosing to create better beliefs for ourselves and choosing to talk about ourselves and talk to ourselves in a much more positive, helpful way. You know, perimenopause, this transition, it's a natural process. And the good news is it is not forever. And the good news, we can do it and we can take control. We can take control back. And I love the quote by Kate Muir. She wrote a book called Everything You Need to Know About Menopause. I mean, there's so many menopause books out there just now, aren't there? But she said, you know, the menopause should be about a metamorphosis. It shouldn't be about misery. So, you know, let's reframe, let's change, you know, challenge our thinking and think about our metamorphosis, our transition into the women who are free of periods, free of horns, you know, free of all of that stuff, and now able to step into this brand new period of our lives where we have a choice to be whoever we want to be, and we can actually create that through our beliefs and our thinking. So that's just a wee bit about mindset and that chapter that we're moving into, you know, that invitation really to you all to go off autopilot and start to live intentionally. But let me talk now about hypnosis just a little bit to wrap up about hypnosis and how that can help. A lot of people, when they come to me, say, oh, I don't want to be hypnotized because I don't want to give away my control. And what we don't know is that we are in trance without even knowing it most of the time. Whenever you watch a film on TV or, you know, read a book even, we're going into a completely different state of mind. And we are in a trance more than we realize it. And so to be able to get into a hypnotic state is really, really simple. And it takes just a very, very slight transition to get into a hypnotic state. Now, if you want to work with a hypnotherapist, then there will be tools they'll use to take in you into what we call an induction, which will take you into a deep hypnotic state. And all we're doing is getting a message to that part of your unconscious mind that your logical part wants to say, no, we're not going there. Because you've got part of your brain that will say, no, 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 we don't want to do any changing because we actually quite like it how it is because we've done that for donkey's years. And a hypnotherapist will just help you get past that critical factor and help give really strong, positive messages to your unconscious mind that it's time to change. And here's the thing. Hypnosis has been scientifically proven to be able to reduce the symptoms of hot flashes. We call them the vasomotor symptoms, hot flashes and the night sweats, by up to 74% in clinical trials, which is massive. And the way that we do that is by giving really, really clear messages to your unconscious mind to be able to interrupt those patterns, the patterns of, you know, falling from the sympathetic nervous system into the parasympathetic nervous system, to be able to get that switch to happen really, really rapidly. And the other great thing that happens under hypnosis is your unconscious mind will be learning these messages, so they'll be able then to help you access that state for yourself. So that's all I really want to talk about this evening, apart from to give you a couple of tips. One on sleep. Hypnosis is brilliant for sleep. So if you want any hypnosis meditations or tapes or hypnosis, then just reach out onto the internet. There's masses of those around. I've got one on my website and, you know, I can give that free to anybody that attends here tonight. I'll give that free sleep hypnosis out if, you know, Laura, you want to make a note of that. And the other thing is that you can learn to do a technique called self-hypnosis. So you can learn to take yourself into the similar state of deep trance on a self-hypnosis journey. And I've got a PDF that I can give out on self-hypnosis that might help you as well. But just to round up, there's just been such amazing information, knowledge, tips, hacks here this evening. I would just like to thank all of the other panel members and especially to you, Laura, for getting this whole thing together this evening. It's been great. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. And listen, ladies, thank you right back for coming on tonight, giving up your time and sharing each of your area of expertise. I know it was a real whistle-stop tour of each of your areas of expertise, and that's why I can't urge ladies watching highly enough to contact each of these powerhouse players in the menopause space and female hormones and all the other great specialisms that you all have. Reach out direct with questions. And I know that, Jean, you mentioned there about your sleep hypnosis and your PDF. If you pop your links below, all of you, so that ladies can reach out, it means that ladies can come direct to you for that very kind offer as well. But a massive thank you. I've been keeping my eyes on the questions. I think you've probably been hitting everyone's questions as you go, because it was so super informative, and I feel myself so much better informed than I've ever been in menopause. So a great thank you. But yes, we're going to round up tonight. If there's any questions, ladies, that you do want to ask and you're watching this in the replay, pop it in the comments box. Let our experts come back to you either direct or in the group. This is a recording. It will go up to the GGC YouTube channel, and it will go onto our podcast as well, although you won't get a great great view of Verity. That is the one caveat of that. But no, listen, ladies, I'm going to stop the live stream now. A big thank you from me, and a big thank you to all who are watching as well. Thank you very much.